Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The St. Louis riverfront on both sides of the river is proving an archaeological treasure trove. A little later, we'll talk about one find that gives a new slant to early settler history. But first, this is the time of year when we begin to worry about severe weather, thunderstorms, hail, high winds, and tornadoes. We get more than our share. Tornadoes have been a source of fascination to author Lee Sandlin since he was a kid growing up in the Midwest. He spent a long time studying them and their history and has determined that the tornado is largely responsible for the science of meteorology as we know it today. It's all recounted in his book, Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chasers. Lee Sandlin joins us by phone from Chicago. Lee, nice to talk to you again.
Oh, a pleasure to talk to you.
Are you there, Lee?
I am.
Lee Sandlin, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm glad we had this connection. I'd be hard-pressed to talk for very long about what I know about tornadoes,
okay.
Other than the fact that I don't like them. Well, it's good to have you.
Yeah, not many people do, really.
No. Yeah. I want to clarify one thing, Lee, before we get started here. Your title, Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chasers, this is not about young people in vans with a lot of technical equipment driving around trying to find tornadoes, is it?
No, there's a little bit about that at the end, but I was more interested in talking about the earlier history, what kind of led up to that. And it's a long story, really. It's one that begins really with Benjamin Franklin in the 18th century and moves forward for a couple of hundred years.
Obviously, there has been a fascination. A lot of people were involved in trying to figure out what made all of this happen. Give us some sense of how this evolved. I know it's a long story, but just in a very general way.
Well, you know, what the interesting thing is that when people first started settling in the Midwest, they really had no idea what tornadoes were. And it was only in the 18th century that people had any serious suspicion that something like tornadoes, that there was any reality to them at all. They knew about water spouts. Travelers had seen water spouts in the Atlantic for years, over centuries, and there had been water spouts in the Mediterranean. But that something like that could form over land was really a new idea. And the first person to seriously consider it, in fact, was Benjamin Franklin, and who became passionately interested in the subject for a few years. Franklin was a man of many enthusiasms, and he went through a period of enthusiasm for the weather. And he was the first person we know about who seriously started speculating about what tornadoes might be and looking through historical records for evidence that they'd happened.
Well, how much exposure would he have had to tornadoes in Pennsylvania, where he spent most of his life, aside from his diplomatic missions abroad?
Well, actually, he is the first person we know about who literally chased a tornado. He and some friends of his were traveling through the Maryland countryside when a small tornado formed in a valley along the road that they were traveling. And according to his letters, everybody else in the party sort of reared back in terror at this strange apparition. And he was so fascinated by it that he went chasing after it on horseback. And so he was literally the first tornado chaser. Mm-hmm. He claims in his letters that he was actually trying to lash at it with his riding crop to see if he could get it to break up.
Well, there's a visual for you.
Yeah, exactly.
What did he find out? Was he able to add much to, the early study of these kinds of storms?
He made a couple of crucial discoveries. Among them, one which might seem, actually, come to think of it, when I've been talking to people about this, they're a little surprised to hear this now. People have this idea that water spouts are actually tubes of water. And he was the first person to realize that that was impossible. Water spouts had to be made out of vapor rather than liquid water. That was an idea that was very far ahead of its time. He also had the idea that water spouts and tornadoes were rising columns of air, which was another idea that wasn't picked up on for really another century.
You know, for a good many years, as I understand from your book, people thought that this was somehow God's punishment, that there was a direct spiritual connection somehow.
Yeah, I think that that idea is still around among a lot of people, actually. It's very hard to see a tornado and not think of God, actually. They're so astonishing a sight, and they do seem somehow supernatural. It's very common in the 19th century to hear them described as the finger of God. Yeah, so the idea that they represented some kind of judgment.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, good. No, I was just only going to say the idea that they represented some sort of judgment would be a natural one to think of if you think of God's judgment as something really immediate anyway.
Yeah, you mentioned the finger of God, and you have a chapter in your book talking about one horrific tornado, a fiery tornado that was referred to as the finger of God. Tell us about that.
Well, this is a subject that's still being very hotly debated, and what I have in my book is my best reconstruction for what people saw at the time. We know that in the midst of very bad forest fires, small dust devils can form that can draw flames up through them, and they turn into these miniature tornadoes that are where the funnel cloud appears to be made out of fire. But there is also evidence that a truly massive tornado can form at the heart of a major firestorm. And the worst one that we know about, documented, that happened in America was one that happened in Peshtigo, Wisconsin. The same night as the Chicago fire in 1871 destroyed the city, there was a huge drought over the entire Great Lakes, and a major forest fire broke out in Wisconsin. And at the heart of this fire, this extraordinary tornado appears to have formed.
It must have been just awful to see something like that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I found about this is that a lot of the survivors had permanent damage to their eyes because even though they were in the midst of the fire, they couldn't look away from the sight of this apparition in front of them.
Did it
and
move?
That's what scorched their eyes.
Did it move like a tornado?
Yeah, it did. And it left a track through the forest of several miles. It appears to have... There's a lot of debate about this because the historical records are vague. And, of course, since the land was completely devastated, it's very hard to reconstruct exactly what happened. But it does appear to have formed as a tornado would just over the open prairie and moved through the forest, except that as it moved, it was drawing the fire into it.
What year was this?
This is in 1871.
Yeah. There's a lot of activity during that year and a lot of people who are trying to figure things out at that time. Some of them had some pretty crazy ideas about what was going on.
Well, you know, tornadoes as they gradually became accepted as real things, which was a slow process, because they're very hard to see, very unpredictable, and there were very few direct eyewitness accounts, especially by trained observers. The exact nature of them was really open for dispute. And there's also the problem, it's always a problem with scientists, of scientists falling in love with their own theories. And a couple of the leading figures in those days in American meteorology each had their own pet theories about tornadoes, which were partially right and partially wrong. And because of that, as often seems to happen, that led to intense sort of emotional bloodshed.
Well, you reference James Espy throughout your book, calling him the father of meteorology.
Yeah, he really was. He doesn't get a lot of credit now for it, in part because he was a very theatrical personality, and he turned himself into a celebrity, and that really kind of hurt his career. He was also somebody who was not given to doubting his own theories. And he had grasped a fundamental, essential truth about tornadoes, and in fact about the process of meteorology generally, which was the importance of rising air currents. It was a process called convection, and that he understood that a tornado was a product of convection, which he was exactly right about, and the idea is still at the core of modern meteorology. But he also thought that it was impossible that tornadoes rotated, because he had this beautifully clear image of his mind as to how tornadoes had to behave, and rotation didn't enter into it. And so when eyewitnesses would say to him, "We saw this tornado and it was rotating," he would just flatly tell them they were wrong about what they'd seen.
But nonetheless, he was over time taken seriously.
He was for a long while. The problem was that, and this is a large part of the book, is that he and the other meteorologists at the time got engaged in this feud that about the nature of tornadoes that in effect paralyzed discussion of them. So while he was respected, after a while, people kind of wanted him to go away. And it wasn't really until after Espy and that entire generation had died and a new generation came up that the logjam broke and people started getting fresh ideas about tornadoes.
So it slowed everything down for a period of time, no question.
Yeah, more than slowed. I think it really kind of paralyzed American science for a couple of decades.
You know, I have to ask about this part of the country. You mentioned Wisconsin and that Finger of God fire, if you will, fire tornado. And Ben Franklin, in Maryland, chasing tornadoes. But most people, when they think of tornadoes, think of this part of the country, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. Why is it that we experience so many of them?
Well, the core idea is that tornadoes form out of the clash of air masses, where you have cold air coming down from Canada, cold dry air, meeting warm humid air coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. And the place where that happens is the prairie and the Great Plains, the central core of the American landscape, is the ideal circumstance for tornadoes to breed. So we get more of them here than we do anywhere else in the world. About 1,200 a year touchdown, on an average year, touchdown in the American Midwest. And there's nowhere else on Earth where that happens quite that frequently. The only area, in fact, where it happens at all frequently is Bangladesh, because they have a very similar situation there where cold dry air is coming off the Himalayas, meeting warm, moist air from the Indian Ocean. And so they see tornadoes there as well, not as many as we do, but they do see them. So the ideal circumstances to create them exist now, really where you are, really in Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma and Iowa and Texas. Those are really dead center for tornado formation.
Well, we're watching the skies today and tomorrow because severe weather is predicted. And most everybody here has some sort of a story to tell about severe weather, including tornadoes.
That's true. And one of the things is that these stories go back a long way. And, whenever I'm in St. Louis, is one of the things people ask me are things like if people learned how to predict tornadoes, or did the Native Americans, for instance, have any useful information about tornadoes? And the Native Americans told the white settlers to build their housing at the junction of rivers because tornadoes don't cross water. And I always think, St. Louis is at the junction of the two largest rivers in North America. And you got your share, more than your share, of tornadoes.
Well, I have to take a break, Lee, but we'll come back and talk about a tornado that struck St. Louis and East St. Louis, and there's a river in between those two places. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Lee Sandlin is our guest. We're talking to him from Chicago. He's in Chicago. We're talking about his book, Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chasers. Really, it's a history of tornadoes in this country. A fascinating read, by the way. We'll come back and continue the conversation. And if you have a tornado story you'd like to tell, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or send us a tweet at STL on air. Back in a moment, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation about the history of tornadoes with Lee Sandlin, who is the author of the book Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chasers. And we'll continue that in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster joins St. Charles County Prosecuting Attorney Tim Lomar in announcing criminal charges against William Harshbarger. He's accused of stealing funds people thought they were donating to the Wounded Warrior Project. Similar charges have been filed by prosecuting attorney Bob McCullough in St. Louis County. U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri has accused General Motors of being a culture of cover-up during CEO Mary Barra's appearance before McCaskill's Consumer Protection Subcommittee. Barra underwent a second day of harsh questioning about why the company took a decade to recall cars with a defective ignition switch. And the Missouri Senate is expected to pass legislation today, making the state's casinos more enticing to high rollers by letting them essentially run a line of credit. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Lee Sandlin. Lee, just recount for us briefly, if you would, that the story of that storm that struck St. Louis and East St. Louis.
Now, are we talking about the there have been so many of them. Which one were you thinking?
The one in which 250 people lost their lives.
Well, if we're thinking of the Tri-State tornado, which crossed St. Louis, these tornadoes are all blurring together in my mind here. The tornado you're talking about was one, if I remember correctly, was happening in the late 19th century.
Right.
And that was one that touched down. This isn't one of the ideas that people have about tornadoes, actually curiously persistent to this day, is that tornadoes don't cross through cities. And this is a tornado that cut through the heart of St. Louis and then crossed the Mississippi and cut through East St. Louis. And it was nothing about the city even remotely deflected it, which is one of these ideas. I don't know why people have this idea that you can't get a tornado near a city core. And so this has been one of, that was one of the worst tornadoes of the 19th century. But it was followed by another one, actually, about 30 years later, that crossed through Missouri, Illinois, and all the way into Indiana, the Tri-State tornado. And that killed killed more than 900 people as it passed. So the area right around there has been a very active one for tornadoes for a long time.
We had another one that went through the city, I guess it was in the 1950s, that didn't cause nearly as much of a loss of life, but it was quite destructive.
Yeah, and tornado casualties have actually been going down since about the middle of the 20th century. Warnings are really starting to help. And people are much more aware of tornadoes as dangers than they used to be. I'm a little worried, actually, that we're starting to see things go the other way again. You know, I've been traveling around the Midwest a lot talking about this book, and one of the things you see all through the Midwest is getting horribly overbuilt, and people are not building storm shelters. People are basically ignoring the threat of tornadoes. And tornadoes are, in fact, very rare. I mean, you can live in the Midwest your entire life without seeing one. But the problem is that as the Midwest gets more and more built, there's fewer and fewer areas that are where a tornado can cause no damage. And we're going to be seeing, I think, more tornadoes in populated areas. And that's the fact that there are so few shelters is going to be a big problem.
Well, meteorologists today, particularly television meteorologists, give themselves a lot of credit for the decrease in the loss of life because they say their early warnings enable people to seek some sort of cover. But you're saying there aren't that many places for them to go to find cover.
Well, this has often been a problem that the tornado warnings do go out and people have no idea what to do. And sometimes they do things which are actively make things worse. One of the things, for instance, because people have seen videos of this, is that when they're in the open country and there's a report of a tornado, people will try to take shelter under a freeway overpass, which is the worst possible place in the open country to take shelter, because the freeway overpass can actually act like a wind tunnel and speed up the air passing around the funnel. And the same thing can happen with warnings in cities where people actually will get in the cars and try to flee from them. And a car is a horrible place to be caught by a tornado.
I wonder, the movie The Wizard of Oz probably gave millions of people their first exposure to tornadoes and what tornadoes can do. I wonder what sort of an influence that has had on people. Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, actually, that was the interesting thing about that is, and this is one thing that's very easy to forget now, is that at that time, even a clear photograph of a tornado was a very rare sight. And The Wizard of Oz was really the first time that lots and lots of people in America got their first look at a tornado. And, of course, it was a Hollywood contrivance. It was a special effect. But the people who make The Wizard of Oz actually took a lot of care to get the look of the tornado right. And so even though you can criticize it now, actually, if you look back, that the movement of it is not exactly right, but the look of it is quite impressive. And that really gave people the idea that tornadoes, of how terrifying tornadoes were, which is, by the way, not something that's in the book. There is a tornado in the book, but it's mentioned very casually and not described at all. I actually don't think that L. Frank Baum knew what a tornado even looked like. And but for the movie version is the one that really kind of burned its way into people's brains.
But Baum did read about one, and as I recall from the book, someone named Dorothy was, I guess, killed or injured or missing
something. Well, it was the sort of thing that would stick in your mind. One of the victims of a tornado in the 1870s in Kansas was named Dorothy Gale, who is the name of the heroine in the Wizard of Oz. And the notion that, you know, somebody like Dorothy Gale had been carried off by a tornado, not something you would easily forget.
Well, there's certainly a difference between a gale and a tornado, isn't there?
Well, not in the language of the time, actually, which is kind of an odd point, is that people then use terms like gale, tornado, hurricane, windstorm, basically interchangeably. The straightening out the nomenclature and saying, oh, no, that's a tornado, that's a gale, is something that actually only happened in the 20th century.
I remember a physics teacher telling us once that there is a song saying, cool gales shall fan the glades. And he says, if it's a gale, it's not fanning anything, it's blowing it away.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the word tornado actually goes back much earlier than the physical sight of a tornado. In the 17th century, a tornado just meant contrary winds, is what sailors called it. It's from the Portuguese to return. And so you'll find in 17th century books descriptions that we were at sea and the weather was fine except for a few tornadoes. And you're just thinking, doesn't sound like good weather to me.
No, not at
all. But all they meant was that the wind was very changeable.
Time is getting away. I want to bring in a call from Phil in Baldwin, who apparently has had some experience with a twister. Let's get his story. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, this was probably about 55 years ago when I was 10 or 12 years old. I lived at 1206 North 9th Street, just near north side of downtown St. Louis. And my dad has filled up some balloons with some natural gas from the kitchen stove, and they float much like helium. And I was outside playing out on 9th Street on the grass, and the wind came up and took these four balloons away from me. And I watched them sail kind of northwest up towards North Camp, out to, St. Anne. I didn't know those cities existed back then. But I saw the sky get real ugly, pea, grayish, green, and I swear to this day you can't prove that those stupid balloons didn't cause that tornado that hit North County, the cities back there. Now I'm a trained weather spotter. I went to a Maryland Heights Center and was trained a couple years ago along with hundreds of other people, mainly from St. Anne, Maryland Heights, Bridgeton area that were affected by the storms in 2011-2012. There's an anniversary coming out up here at the end of April, April 28th, two years ago. Big hail, this size hail. Oh, wow. Thank you very much.
Bill, thank you for the story. He mentioned he's a weather spotter, and you also spent some time in your book, Lee Sandlin, talking about Corporal John Finley. I guess he got all of that started.
Yeah, and he worked for the United States Signal Corps, who in the late 19th century were running the National Weather Service. And he was traveling around. And one thing that is true of what the caller just said, which Finley also found to be true, is that pretty much everywhere he went, people had tornado stories, and they all remembered the tornado extraordinarily vividly after several decades. And they, even in a lot of towns, they would date everything in their town from when the tornado had passed through. You know, Finley would go to towns and they would say to them, oh, yes, we built a church there. That was 5 years after the tornado. Or those people came to town, and they moved here 3 years before the tornado. The tornado was this instant landmark in people's historical memory, and that's true really all through the Midwest. People still tend to date things by when their relationship to the big tornado.
Well, Lee Sandlin, you've done a great job in documenting this this history over the last several hundred years. Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chases is the name of the book. It's a fascinating read. There's much more included in the book that we would have time to talk about here today. I thank you so much, Lee, for being with us.
Oh, this has been my pleasure.
That is Lee Sandlin. Again, the book is Storm Kings, America's First Tornado Chasers. Coming up, Chasing the Past, new archaeological findings in our St. Louis riverfront. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.